You know, and the reason why JD's joining us here, it's a season, we'll call it, the season of Camp Little Giant. And you know what's interesting about this? Because when you go back, SIU is a home of firsts, and a lot of people don't recognize these things. But in 1952, Camp Little Giant started.
Correct.
And that's what, that experience with what goes on at Camp Little Giants was the seed that created Special Olympics.
Also correct.
And that's a pretty cool little...
I really think that's a huge thing for Southern Illinois. I mean, you know, Southern Illinois, we're small. We're Southern Illinois, you know. When everybody talks about Illinois, oh, you must be from Chicago. No, I'm from Southern Illinois. And that's a big thing to pin on our hat right there.
It's hard to imagine going back to 1952 and seeing what special populations were treated like in, it didn't matter where you were. They were pushed off to the side. Special programs, you go away, out of sight, out of mind, is the way I think things were handled to a large extent in 1952.
They were spending their lives in an institution, a lot of people with disabilities were.
And suddenly this guy gets this crazy idea about their therapeutic recreation. This guy gets this crazy idea. What's therapeutic recreation?
Therapeutic recreation is really just like it sounds. It's recreation. But it's done in a manner that offers a lot of experiences to people that usually wouldn't be able to do them. So if you're going to go, you know, you think of going canoeing, well, you and I are going to do it one way, but somebody in a wheelchair is going to do it a little bit in a different way.
Right.
And you just take that and you adapt that a little bit so that that person can get out. And that form of recreation really does become therapeutic.
We've seen it happen with horses.
Yep.
There's a gentleman here, I believe he's from here. If not, they were making him here. Was a John boat that the side went down so you could put a wheelchair on board. Now, first thing I thought is that's the coolest thing ever.
Yep.
All right. We've done a lot of this here. All right. And in Camp Little Giant, which is going on now, has been this impetus. And I think. What would autism be treated like today had there not been an eye-opening for other developmentally disabled through programs like Camp Little Giant? I actually see a string running through those things of how we treat these people, how we help our friends, and the services we make available. I see a string that runs through this, right, from Doc 1952 all the way through.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I mean, honestly, I can't even imagine what life would be like if Dr. Freeburg and Justice Ann Burke hadn't done the work that they did. And, you know, Dr. Freeburg wasn't happy. He wasn't satisfied. He said, all people deserve to be able to do the same.
We marginalized those folks.
Yeah. And, you know, they took their idea and ran with it and turned it into 5 million athletes worldwide. That now participate in athletics that may not have been doing that had they not had that vision.
I did an interview with Marvin Hamlisch once, and it's weird how you can take away things from meeting people like that. And this guy is, you know, right, talented guy. He said, I'm like asking him about music. He says, here's the thing about music. It can teach young people that they can do something well. And I hear the echo of that inside of Camp Little Giant.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not only that you can do something well, maybe just that you can do something at all, where maybe before you've been marginalized to the extent that you would never be able in the back of a horse. You'd never be in a canoe. You'd never zip line. And giving that confidence that comes, you know, I can see a gallon of gas, but I can't see a gallon of confidence.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And, you know, you'll hear it from the campers at the end of their session or at the end of the entire summer.
They don't want to go home.
They don't want to go home. They're, a lot of them, I mean, tears.
And they don't want to leave their friends.
Yep. It's a huge social opportunity for the campers that come. But it is all of those pieces of building the confidence in them that entire week or two that they're there. Some of them just aren't getting that for the other 51 or 50 weeks out of the year, unfortunately.
Right. Same thing happens on the day of the Special Olympics. You get the anticipation all year long. You get there, and people, you know, I was doing this presentation on this and been a number of years ago with Vinegoni Distributing, who's always been a strong supporter of these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a presentation in Murfreesboro, where we talk about, you know, you and I, you know, we're bartenders and rock bands, and people want to have their pictures taken with us. Nobody races up for these folks and says, can I get a picture with you?
Yep.
They do now.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the programs to do it. So, Camp Little Giant, how many people, you have, like, is it multiple sessions of 2 weeks? How does that work?
It is. So, campers can come in 1 week or 2 weeks. And for certain exceptions, some campers can just come for the day and go home at night if they're local, and that works out the best for them. We'd prefer that they stay the night to get the full camp experience.
Right.
But most are 1 week or 2 week sessions. Right now, we've started with the adults. Actually, we'll start with the adults on Sunday. So our adult
your first
camps,
session just starts this week.
Yep, okay. On Sunday it starts. And after the adult sessions, 3 weeks of that, then we move into the children's sessions of camp for the last part of the summer.
Is it broken up? I mean, like, say one group is only wheelchair maybe or something? I mean, are there lines of delineation so that you can help package a better ability or a better experience?
In some areas there are. For example, this very first week are adults with very low mobility. A lot of them are in a wheelchair. A lot of them have feeding tubes. So it's just a little tougher for them to get around, and they need one-on-one care. And actually throughout the rest of the summer, it's pretty, you know, diverse group that comes in with whatever needs that they might have.
Right.
And then we end it with more of a specialized group. It winds up being kids with ADD, ADHD for that last week. So those
right.
are really the only two sessions that are really kind of...
But you can contour those programs. And it's
exactly.
necessary, especially wheelchair as opposed to attention deficit disorder. We're talking about two different items.
Yep.
But, you know, it's weird how you describe this, and all I can see is the need for volunteers. I mean, because that part of the job, the experience, go to Camp Little Giant, I wonder if this the volunteers, the workers, are not the grease that allows the wheel to turn.
Yeah, you're, right on the ball. I mean, right now we probably have 40 or 50 staff that are coming in, and they get small pay, but they don't get paid a lot. They're coming in for the experience.
Long hours, too.
Yeah, long hours. But, you know, they're coming back year after year because they really feel like they've made a difference in a life. The hardest part for us staffing-wise is usually nursing. Nurses make a lot of money, and we can't afford it. We're a camp. We can't afford to
There's
pay a lot of money.
There's a nurse shortage everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just you.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I mean, it is what it is.
Right.
So it's a struggle for us some years to get those positions all full.
How much? I know that I hate this. This is such a I don't think we should qualify what it does by a dollar amount. Yeah, I mean, I can get the cost, but I think there's a price that you pay if you don't do it. I know that that's maybe just torturing a couple of words, but if we know the cost, we know the price. So what? How do you afford to do this for so many people? That's the hard question. Isn't
yeah,
it?
That's a good question. I ask for money all the time.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, the campers, it sounds kind of hefty. Most campers pay $500, and then campers with high needs pay around $1,100 or $1,200.
Right.
So that's a lot for a week. But by the time you pay one-on-one care and a nurse and all the cooks.
And 24 hours a day.
24-hour a day care, exactly. It doesn't amount to that much money.
So this year, I mean, are you worried about money this year and the campers you have coming? Or how does this work?
Currently, I'm not too worried about money.
Good.
I mean, right now, Touch Nature has a ton of support from my boss, who's the vice chancellor of student affairs, as well as the chancellor on campus. So, I mean, to be connected with the university and to have their support. That they're not giving me financial support, but they're, you know, giving me yeses to the things that I need when I need them.
Right.
So that support has been huge for us.
And the community as a whole.
And the community as a whole. I mean, we've seen a big turnaround for Touch of Nature with the community over the last 4 or 5 years. We've gotten, I mean, River Radio alone has been a huge supporter of us over the last 2 or 3 years. And that.
So we kind of saw a reboot in Touch of Nature, I think.
I think it's safe to say we're definitely in the middle of a reboot.
Maybe it's cyclical in nature. I'm not sure which. But see, here's this. I can see a gallon of gas, but I can't see a gallon of these other things that we do. And there's so often I find that I'm drawn to the esoteric, the things you can't qualify and quantify. Let's just hypothetically say an SIU football player becomes a teacher in Indiana, and he's got an experience of volunteerism and the campus of SIU, and he becomes a teacher, and he decides he's not going to let somebody hurt his students.
Yep.
All right. We do that with a large group of people who work at, for instance, Touch of Nature, and those people volunteer. They learn something about the human condition that they wouldn't learn any other way, and they take that with them wherever they go the rest of their lives. And I cannot put a price tag on that, and I cannot say there's a gallon worth of this empathy for your fellow human being, people who you see marginalized, and that you know you're going to chip in and help, and you realize I can't do it alone. It's a team effort. And you see people go out like Justice Burke,
yep,
who gets that experience, goes somewhere else, and creates another garden of help.
Yeah, I mean that's when I look at our camp staff, I think that every year. I mean, somebody's going to take what they're learning about people in general at this camp, and they're going to take it and run, and they're going to do something amazing with it. It might be in a small community, or it might be worldwide. Like,
and it might be just the tolerance you'd exhibit in the checkout lane with a small child who's maybe autistic, who's not cooperating with mom or dad as well as they should. And that there's a lot of different kind of levels that we're involved here with.
Yeah.
So do you do fundraisers for Camp Little Giant?
We do fundraisers for Touch of Nature in general.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really in general for the entire organization.
Everything that comes into Touch of Nature for our facilities and our programs helps support Camp Little Giant. You can always just donate directly to Camp Little Giant on our website. Even if you don't have a child or an adult with a disability,
right,
you can get on our website and give money and say, hey, I would love to send a kid or an adult to camp and just donate that money. Our annual fundraiser for the facility is our Buffalo Trail.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have become the curator of a historic program.
Yeah, it wasn't something that I was expecting when I took the job about 4 years ago. That is one of my duties now, yeah.
And I think you get it, too.
Yep.
It's not something that you go, oh, yeah, well, I get a job, and I'll go home at 5, and everything will be fine. I'll go watch Big Bang reruns. That's not the life you get to live when you're working in a program like this.
No, I've definitely gotten much grayer since I arrived.
I was thinking more of a hair loss thing, but yeah, gray if you want to go with gray.
And I'd say it's gray for good. I mean, you know, it's a good thing that I get to be in charge of and work with every day and change a lot of lives. I'm excited to do it.
Right. And I've been around this and watched this. I'm fortunate enough to have lived long enough to where I have seen there's so many things that we've screwed up as a race, as a species, right?
Yep.
Right. Let's take an example. When I was a kid, and let's say I'm 9, 10 years old, right? And you see domestic violence is like, well, that's what happens in the NBA, and we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, as I went through life, this is one of the things that we'll fix. We'll get better at this. This won't happen anymore. Well, it didn't happen. But what you're doing is one of the few cases where we, at least here in the United States, and I can speak from this on a level of authority in Southern Illinois, from everything we've done, including the Bowen Center in Harrisburg, which was turned into a prison. I'm not a big fan of that call,
mm-hmm,
right? But this is one of the things that we've gotten better at. People who are marginalized, maybe it's appearance, maybe it's an intellectual disability, maybe it's a physical disability, and those people are not put in the back room with the shades drawn. They're part of our culture, they're part of our community now, and this is one of the few, and quite frankly, if you press me, I couldn't come up with a number two. Maybe drunk driving we're doing better at, something like that maybe.
Yeah.
But this is the one thing I can hold up that we do better. And SIU has never gotten the credit for this that it deserves.
I would 100% agree with you on that. I mean, we have served...
Ask Bill Norwood, the first black quarterback of SIU, whether he would agree too.
Yeah.
That this is one of the things that SIU has broken barriers.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with it. Touch of Nature alone, I mean, it was considered a cutting-edge facility in the 50s when Delight Morris and Dr. Freeberg started that. I mean, it was
cutting-edge.
And
not because of the buildings, but what was going on in the minds of people that were operating it.
Exactly. The idea of taking students out of the classroom and letting them learn in the outdoors for an entire semester... People were rolling
hippies.
Over. Yeah, exactly.
You damn hippies. Right? Seriously, the response.
Yeah.
And it was still, by the way, that was 1952. They were still saying in the 60s. and the early 70s too.
And then, yeah, and then to top it off, we're also going to take people in wheelchairs out and do the same thing with
them. Well, you're going to
hurt them. Then you're really crazy. Yeah.
You're really crazy, right?
Yep.
And we learned a lot of things. And next thing you know, they're not just in the canoe, they're in the water too.
That's right.
And, you know, and that's an incredible experience, that buoyancy and that freedom that you get if you've been in a wheelchair for your entire life. Totally unappreciated.
You are correct.
From our perspective, anyway.
Yep.
So, once again, curator. You're a groundbreaker. You keep moving forward. I mean, and that's never an easy task because there's uncertainty and there's risk.
Yeah. Yeah. There's challenges every day. Yeah. Like I said, when I walked in, I said, I'm awesome. But yeah, I mean, we've got challenges every day.
I had a friend of mine who used to run this radio station. He says, anybody says they don't have a problem, they don't have a mess up, they're liars.
Yeah.
That was an interesting quote from Mr. Bob Ferrari from years ago. Hey, it's good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Interested, next time you have a fundraiser, Camp Little Giant, love to hear about it.
Okay, I'm happy to tell you all about it.
All right, so because this is a wonderful experience for a lot of people, camp is a cool thing. And what's interesting is what Doc Freeburg knew in 1952, widely accepted medical research. If you spend time in the woods alone, you are a healthier, physically healthier, mentally healthier. Known scientific research, well documented. He knew it in 1952. Somebody should have been paying better attention.
Yeah, doctors are just now starting to prescribe it.
In Japan, they've known.
Prescribing the outdoors, yeah.
Germany, big deals. There was a bunch of it done in Scotland where they've done this research, too. It's not just here. It's everywhere. We're going back to nature. We were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, and we still resent it. And now when we go back, we realize we get something you can't get any other way. And now the kids at Camp Little Giant get two, too.
You are correct.
J.D. Tanner. Always good to say you, too, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me,
Tom. And it's one of the few people I can be this esoteric with, and you get it. So I always kind of enjoy that, too.